The reading today is from Joshua chapter 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people, get ready to cross the river Jordan into the land I am about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to the Lebanon, from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. But keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. 3 days from now you will cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving to you for your own. But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you after he said, the Lord your God will give you rest by giving you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan. But all your fighting men, ready for battle, must cross over ahead of your fellow Israelites. You are to help them until the Lord gives you them rest, as he has done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving them. After that, you may go back and occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you east of the river Jordan towards the sunrise. Then they answered Joshua, whatever you have commanded us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey it, whatever you command them will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous.
So I'm now going to say the uncomfortable bit about Joshua. Because it is uncomfortable. Getting to this part in the big story of God is a very tricky part. Because it involves one people group going to war and getting rid of another people group and throwing them out of their country. And very often people say to me, Sheila, how can you believe in a Bible which justifies ethnic cleansing? Really, it's a tough story, this one. So I do think it's worth just addressing that. Let me just say this. God took a very, very, very long time to decide that the people who lived in the promised land originally had not honoured the land, and he gave his people permission to inhabit that land. God never said they were taking the land. God always said God was giving them the land. It wasn't about their triumphalism. Wasn't about their victory. So when I say God had taken a long time, he truly had. He'd taken 440 years. Back to the time of Abraham, when the land was first promised, God actually said, no, you've got to go to Egypt because the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full peak. God did not do this lightly. 400 years and then another 40 years wandering around the wilderness. And finally they get to the border. And you know, I don't think that God was only on the side of the Israelites. and God was against the occupiers of the land. I don't think that was how it was at all. I actually think that God was very boundaried. If you notice at the beginning of Joshua, in that reading we heard, he delineated all the borders. And we might be sitting there with our empire hats on thinking, ooh, what a big place. Actually, God was saying, no, this much and no further. This much and no further. God was boundaried. Yes, his people could have a safe place, but no, they were not going to take over the world. This was not empire building. This was not going to be like the Persian Empire or the Roman Empire or all those other people who get it into their heads that they're really powerful and that they should rule the world. So this is quite different. Also, if you get to chapter 2 of Joshua, which I recommend, you have a fantastic story about Rahab, who's A, a woman, B, a prostitute, and she gets included in the story. More than that, she gets included in the line that leads right down to King David. If that isn't a contrast and God talking about inclusivity and all people being welcome to be part of the family of God, then I don't know what is. So that's the biblical answer to the question, is it about ethnic cleansing? No, it isn't. The historical answer is actually historians have shown that never mind what they were told, the Israelites, they didn't actually do it very well anyway. The people groups who lived there, they just kind of went into the land. Yeah, they had a couple of big victories, Jericho, Ai, but beyond that, they pretty much merged. And God was okay with that. Well, he kind of was. He wasn't happy about the mix of religion. He wanted them to live in a way that was distinctive and different. That was the whole point of them being the chosen people, that they would be distinctive, that they would show other nations. They wouldn't sacrifice their children to God because they knew that God wasn't like that. But other nations were doing that. They were called to be different. But it wasn't that God was more on the Israelites' side than on anybody else's side. And this problem of finding a safe place to be is a perennial human problem. Every people group on our planet has faced this problem. Where am I from? Where are you from? Some of you are more Viking, some of you are more Celt, some of you are from Australia or, you know, we have come from all over the globe. Nowadays, with the wonders of DNA, we can find out that we're actually a glorious mix. Thank goodness we don't believe that any race is what more superior than any other. My sister did her DNA. I don't believe the results, but anyway, allegedly, 5 generations back, my great-grandfather or grandmother, one of the grandparents 5 generations back, was allegedly a Gujarat Indian. Go figure. I don't know. But anyway, the point is, every human people group needs a place to feel safe. Now, I'm not going to talk very much more biblically because last week we had a really great talk about Moses, but it was all about the Bible. I want to bring this story into today, and I want to talk about what this story of Joshua and the place to be safe means today to us. Okay? What it means to us is that God still wants people to be in safe places. Now, there's a clue in that memory verse that I learned as a child, which you might not quite have heard. He says to Joshua, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Not just into this promised land, but wherever you go. That's part of the clue. The other part of the clue is, hint, hint, Joshua, I'm your safe place. It isn't the place. It isn't the boundaries. It's me. Place, presence. Place becomes presence. If we are in the presence of God, we are safe. That was what God wanted at the beginning. Right at the beginning of Genesis, when we were in that lovely garden and everything was safe and happy, that was what God wanted. God came and walked in the garden and chatted to Adam and Eve at the end of the day. It was the presence of God. And ever since humankind left Eden and started trekking away from God, they did not feel safe. So it is the presence of God that makes us safe. That's how we are to be different as people. It isn't where we are. It isn't owning our own home. It isn't any of those things that we think makes us safe, because actually those things could be threatened at any time. I don't know about you, but the world doesn't feel as safe a place in 2025 as it did in 2024. Seems to me an awful lot of warmongering going on. We as Christians need to know that our place of safety is in God and with God. And we, as the people of God, offer that place of safety to others. Now, I've said enough, I think, because I actually did write a sermon, but I left it at home. So I'm kind of working on flying by the seat of my pants. I'm going to make you do some thinking. I'm going to make you do some thinking. And on your tables, there's something to help you think. We're going to think about the difference it makes to be a tenant, it's on the back of this sheet, or an owner. Okay? So 5 minutes around your tables, have a conversation, at least one person on the table, please, jot down some ideas. What's the difference between being a tenant and being an owner? Okay? All right, off you go. Okay, so, how are you doing? Has it been too hard, or have you been coming up with some ideas? Oh, you've got lots written down on this table. Wow, well done. Could you tell us some things that are true about being a tenant then? Sarah, would you?
A certain amount of insecurity in that you could be asked to leave at any time, really, or within a month or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, and another one?
That you are answerable to the landlord. I suppose that's very similar, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. They'll take those two from you. A bit insecurity, answerable to the landlord. Can you add anything else, or did you have those two things about tenants? Somebody read it for me.
Flexibility.
Oh, okay, flexibility. That's an advantage, yeah?
And power. The owner's got power.
Okay, power. Owner's got power. We've moved on to owner. Anything else about tenants? Anyone else get anything different? Yeah, go on.
If you're a tenant, you have to pay rent.
Yeah, if you're a tenant, you have to pay rent. And so the obvious thing is, therefore, you don't actually...
don't own the property.
You don't own it. Yeah, yeah. I know that was obvious, but it's worth saying. So you don't own it. You have to pay rent. Okay, so let's move on to the owner. If you're an owner, what's true? Can we have some things from you guys?
Responsibility.
For what?
The tenant, the property, or the land.
Oh, all three, maybe. The tenant, their well-being, and the property, and the land. Yeah? Okay. So it's not just power, it's responsibility. Yeah? Anything different? Anything else about being an owner? Go on.
It provides, you can leave an inheritance to your children.
Yes, if you own it, it can be inherited. Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah, well done, well done. Anything else? No? Go on.
Control.
Oh, control, yes. Yes, I think so, control. What do you think on your list, as you look at your list, on the side of the tenant, what's the worst thing about being a tenant? Thank you, Sarah. Insecurity, that anxiety, not knowing if you can stay here, if in a year's time you'll be able to still be there, or whether you have to move. Yeah? Okay. Right, okay. So having thought about that a little bit, we're just going to take a pause and we'll stay seated and we'll sing this song that's going to come up on the screen in a moment. This is a version of a psalm. Before we carry on and read what's on the other side of the piece of paper and think some more about how it feels to be either homeless or a refugee. And also we need to think, are we tenants or are we owners? Are we tenants or are we owners? I found that poem amazingly powerful. I think that's an incredible poem. So what does it say about us? Are we owners or tenants? We're tenants, aren't we? And we know that Jesus told stories over and over again about tenants, didn't he? And about the Lord being the landlord, but being a good landlord, you know, and sending a servant and then sending his son. That's a theme that goes all the way through the Bible, that God is a good, powerful, but good landlord. What about Psalm 62? Did you find some safe words, some words for safe places? What were they? What did you underline? What might you have underlined? Oh, pretty much all of it. Okay. I was thinking of the word fortress. That sounds like a really safe place to me. The Lord is my fortress. It's my refuge. Yeah. My righty rock. Yes. Yeah. But that it all starts with that first line. Truly my soul finds rest in God. God is my rock. Now, yes, this is all very, very comforting for us when we feel threatened for our livelihoods, for our homes, when we feel insecure because of all the news. This is good news. But I want to take us out of ourselves with this next song. I want us to apply this truth to the two-thirds world, the huge number of people who, unlike us, do not have secure homes, do not have safe places, maybe do not have a home at all. And I want to remind you of what we said at the very beginning, that God is out there. And we are called to be the kingdom of God that makes those people, offers those people a safe place. When this song that we're about to is based on Matthew 25, the story of the sheep and the goats. And when Jesus turns to his disciples and says, when I was in prison, when I was hungry, when I was naked, when I was sick, you came and you helped me and you clothed me. And they're like amazed. We never saw you, Jesus. We didn't see you. I was always there. I'd encourage you as we listen to this song just before we pray to watch the screen. Imagine that Jesus is the first image you see, but then know that Jesus is in the faces of all the other people.